So, good afternoon, everybody. It's a rainy afternoon here in Brussels, so a very good opportunity to sit behind your computer and attend some sessions. Well, you all know this session is about Windows Azure. I'm going to give you an overview, going to talk about new features. Just want to mention, how would you start with Azure? I hear a lot of people asking questions. Well, we want to work with Azure, but we don't know really how to start with it. So the basic idea is you have Visual Studio 2010 and some SQL Server Express running on your machine. And then you can download the SDK. There is also an additional training kit, and there are lots of examples on code.msdn.com. So the Azure SDK is actually, an emulator of Azure running on your development box. So you can develop, debug, test your applications locally before you start deploying them. So once you have the technical bits, next step is that you need a subscription. Azure is offered as a service, so you need some subscription to start developing, to start deploying onto the cloud. There are some different ways to start a subscription. First of all, there is a free introductory special. We have an offering for MSDN subscribers. There is also the normal usage, which is the consumption model, the pay-as-you-go plan. And beyond that, we have some promotional offers. I will discuss more of these offers in the next slides. So the introductory special is really no charge. There is no monthly commitment. You can use it whenever you want. And included in the free offering is 25 hours of running a small compute instance. You also have some storage. You have a 1 GB database, and also the data transfer in and out of the data center is included. The next step is, if you want more than 25 hours, and you are an MSDN subscriber, it's good to know that MSDN is part, or that Azure is part of your MSDN subscription. And it is also very important to understand you can run production applications with your MSDN subscription. So how do you start with your MSDN subscription? You log into the MSDN portal, you look for the Windows Azure platform icon, and then you create your subscription. For that subscription, you are allowed to run 750 hours in 1 month a virtual machine. So this is a complete month. You can run your application for free based on an MSDN subscription for the complete month. And you have three databases of 1 GB, so you can store 3 GB of database in SQL Azure. And you also have enough bandwidth capacity and data transfer in and out. Beyond that, if you want to really go into production or maybe start to resell your subscription, there are three promotional offers. The Windows Azure Core, which is only there for running virtual machines. There is no SQL database included in that. Costs you about €42. There is a SQL Azure Core offering, which is 10 gigabyte of database. And then you have a combination of the two. So for about €78, you have the Windows Azure and SQL Azure Extended offering, which is the combination of compute power and SQL storage on the other side. More information if you want, have a look at the website microsoft.com windows-azure/offers. So far, this word from our sponsors. Now let's continue with the real content. An overview of the Azure platform. While Azure is a scalable hosting environment, it runs computes, it has compute power, it has storage. Three parts of that. Windows Azure really to host your virtual machines, to run your applications inside the virtual machine. And SQL Azure, which is the relational database storage in the cloud. And Azure App Fabric, which is there to bridge different applications or to secure your applications across network boundaries. So App Fabric is a service bus, is an access control system, is a caching environment. It is there to support your other applications running on premises that want to connect to your cloud applications. So these are the three building blocks. Let's go more in detail of each of the building blocks. Windows Azure, three parts: the compute power, running applications, the storage. And this type of storage is not related to SQL Azure. It is just a flat file storage. It is accessible through HTTP, either private or public, and you can store whatever you want in that. A new feature that we see is, and I will show you a very cool demo on that feature later on, is virtual network. You can connect multiple machines, and one of those machines can be running on premises with your cloud applications and the other way around. So you're really creating a kind of virtual network in which some machines are inside your data center and some of the machines are running in the cloud in the Microsoft data center, and they can connect to each other. For SQL Azure, we currently have a database offering ranging from a database size from 1 gigabyte to 50 gigabytes. Currently in CTP, there is some kind of reporting services. We are supporting that reports are created on premises by using Business Intelligence Designer Studio. And you can upload the RDL files to SQL Azure in the cloud, and you can have the reporting from within your application or also public. Third part of SQL Azure is the data synchronization technology. There is a new version of that. And the data synchronization called DataSync allows to synchronize multiple SQL Azure databases in the cloud, or also have synchronization from on-premises databases to your SQL Azure in the data center. So they can synchronize in both directions. We can synchronize in one direction, in multiple directions, whatever you want. And then the third part, Azure App Fabric, we have the service bus, which is really a bus system, a kind of service bus in the cloud where multiple applications can connect to, and also those applications can be running in the cloud, can also be running on premises, and they can exchange WCF SOAP-based or REST-based messages. So it's at the level of the application that we are connecting two types of, and that we are connecting two applications. If you compare that to virtual network will connect two machines on the IP level. Service bus will connect two applications exchanging SOAP messages or REST messages. Access control is the technology to support federated identity. So think about like a single sign-on system on the cloud. You log in into some identity provider like LiveID, or maybe you are already logged in locally in your Active Directory. And that system is generating claims that your application can understand. And the idea about federated identity is that you don't do the authentication and authorization inside your application, but that it is federated. Somebody else is doing the authentication for you. Maybe LiveID, maybe Active Directory on premises. And then the newcomer, which we'll try to show a demo later on, is caching. Caching is a technology to solve the problem that virtual machines in Azure are typically stateless, and they have to be stateless to have a good architecture. But should they be not stateless and you're working with sessions, then you can persist the sessions into the caching environment. So this means every instance of your application can access session variables from within that caching environment. More details on that later. So those are the three main building blocks, which each of them, well, at least three sub-technologies. Besides those three main blocks, we have another service offering, part of the Azure platform, which is called the Marketplace. Marketplace is an online environment where developers can share data and application, and where consumers can use finished service or maybe rent the data that you are publishing to use in their own applications. So two things here. We have a data market, and data markets means we're going to sell and somebody else will buy our data. So if you have a very useful set of data that you think you can sell to somebody else may be interested in that data for their application, well, data market, the Azure Marketplace and data market is the platform to do that, selling and buying your data. But also new since a few months is Azure Marketplace for applications. If you have created a cool Azure application or maybe some tooling for a certain technology within Azure, then you can also sell it through the marketplace. So you can make money off your proof of concepts by word of speaking. If you have a good application, well, please have a look at Azure Marketplace. Very useful to port it to there and earn some money on it. And then another part of Azure is the CDN, Content Delivery Network. Content Delivery Network allows that public data that is stored in an Azure data center within the blob storage can be cached by many different other networks. So we have about 7 or 8 data centers for Azure worldwide, but beyond those 7 or 8 data centers, there are multiple nodes in other countries that only store a copy of your blob storage. So you can bring your HTML files or maybe your media files or whatever content that you have, you can bring them to a place where the user can access that that blob storage very, very fast, because that CDN node is somewhere in the country of your end user. So if the end user goes to your blob and it hits the CDN nodes first, well, the CDN node will ask the Azure data center, well, do you have that blob storage? And it will send it to the user. Whenever the user or another user in the same geographical area than the first user accesses that blob again, well, it is served from the CDN node. So you're not hitting your data center, it is served from the CDN node, which makes the latency between the browser and the data store very small compared to otherwise with your Azure data center. This is an overview of all the data centers. 4 of them are in the US, 2 of them are in Europe. There is one in Asia. And then you see the little service on this world map. Those are the CDN nodes. So we have CDN nodes all over the place. So now let's go more into detail about the architecture of a typical Azure application. In terms of Azure, we don't call it applications. We will rather call it services. So it's a service can consist of multiple roles, web roles, work roles, and those roles can access storage, which can be tables or blobs, but can also access a SQL database, of course. So from within your web role and your work role, you can have access to a SQL database. But also that SQL database can be called from wherever in the world you want, if you have the correct credentials to have access to that SQL database and the firewall is configured correctly. So the internet can also have access to your SQL database, SQL Azure. So this means these are different building blocks. I can imagine that you have an architecture maybe where that you don't need queues, tables, and blobs. You don't need storage. You only need a web role, so an ASPX environment, an ASPX application that is accessing a SQL server. Or maybe a totally different application type could be that we're having a worker role, and a worker role is not accessible through HTTP. It's not a website. It is just a process running in the data center, which doesn't need SQL server, but only accesses your storage. Maybe it only needs tables to do some calculations, to read some information from one table, and store it in another table. So all different building blocks, and together with them, you create your architecture. Okay. So now that we have mentioned roles, what are exactly roles? Roles are applications running in a virtual machine. So a role is actually an application which can be instantiated by multiple virtual machines. You can decide for your virtual machine it will have 1, 2, 4, or 8 CPU cores. And while this is the most important part of the whole Azure story, you can decide to have multiple instances of the virtual machine running. So each virtual machine is exactly the same. It contains your application. It contains your application as a web application running under IIS. And I can decide to have, for instance, 10 instances of a virtual machine. And in the data center, there is a load balancer that will distribute all the requests to the URL of your application. It will distribute and broadcast all the requests to one of the instances of your virtual machines. It will do that in a round-robin principle. This means for every request that comes into the load balancer will forward it to the next virtual machine. So if you have 8 virtual machines and you have 9 requests, only the 9th one will go back to the first machine. So this implicates that your virtual machine or the application in the virtual machine should work stateless because there is no sticky sessions. Roles, we have 3 types. I already discussed them a little bit. Web roles are internet-facing, typical request response cycles. They are running ASP.NET code, WCF code, or also in the new SDK, you can configure it that it is also running, for instance, classic ASP, or you can also run Java, PHP, CGI scripting, and so on. It is basically a virtual machine that is running IIS 7, and you can configure it. You can host an application on that. So that's the web role. The work role is different. It's background processing. Has typically an endless loop. It will run forever, but it is not accessible by default. It's not accessible from within the internet. It has some internal endpoints. So a web role, for instance, can call a work role through internal endpoints, and those internal endpoints are also WCF services. So the work role typically can also host WCF services. The third type we have, a very important one, and this is new since a few months. It was announced at PDC 2010, last year, is the VM role, virtual machine role. So the virtual machine role is your customized virtual image. You build your VM role yourself instead of having a role, which is a web role or work role, deployed in the cloud. Going to show you a quick demo how to create an Azure application. I have Visual Studio. First, I want to share my desktop, of course. So I have installed the Azure SDK on top of Visual Studio 2010. And now I have this template for creating a project, Windows Azure project. And if I ask for creating an Azure project, I have this screen where I can say, well, I need a web role, and maybe I need a work role, and so on. So I can decide what the topology of my application would be. And then he creates the template. He has some template code. And I have this icon here where I can add more roles. For instance, here, important, I can add a virtual machine role. So then I have a virtual machine role within the same service. So in this service, one web role, one work role, and one virtual machine role. Well, then let's say for the web role, I need 3 instances. And those instances can be large. Large means we have not only one processor, we have multiple processors. So small means one processor. So small means we have one processor, large means we have, or medium means we have 2 processors, large means 4 extra large A's. And then we also have something new, extra small. An extra small is like sharing a processor. It's not as expensive as a small instance, but you have to understand you're sharing some CPU. So only from within a small instance you have a dedicated CPU. For an extra small instance, which only costs $5 compared to $12 for a small one, but you don't have any dedicated CPU. So this is the way that you create your solution, the topology of your services, and there is also some configuration underneath it. So this is the UI to configure some XML files to do the configuration. Here you typically see for the web role there is ASPX pages, and for the work role there are no ASPX pages. The work role has this endless loop, and the web role has request response calls to PSP XPages. Okay. So how do you deploy such a solution? Well, Visual Studio supports you in deploying your Azure project just by having a click on publish. So once you publish, you ask for publishing, you are asked for some credentials. And those credentials are created when you start your Azure subscription. You can also delegate other users to do the deployment. But actually, this deployment is not doing it with live ID credentials, but with some certificates. So you can create a certificate, deploy it to the management portal, and then have Visual Studio use that certificate to do a secure upload of the package and to configure whatever you want. So going back to the slides, this was a very high-level overview of how to develop on Azure. Going back to the slides now. Okay. Okay, this is better. So, new features. The developer portal, which is brand new. So, the developer portal is also the administrative portal to provision your services, to create storage accounts, to create SQL databases, which is built in Silverlight. We already talked about the extra small instance. Then two little features, but features that can be important are elevated privileges and full IaaS. The virtual machine role is new. Remote desktop, very interesting to have access to your machines in the cloud and to change something, to see the log files, to test your applications. Azure Virtual Network, also known as Connect, and caching. So first of all, the startup tasks, which are part of the technology called elevated privileges. The idea behind startup tasks is that you can have a short unattended script that is run when your role starts up. Like for instance, installing something that is not part of the .NET framework, but you want to install it, and you can package the MSI or maybe the COM components into your package. And then you can, when the machine boots, it is calling some command file. And in that command file, you're executing the install of some component. Maybe you want to change some registry key settings. You want to do some configuration of IaaS and so on. So you all do this configuration in the CSDev file. So from within Visual Studio, this means. A few types of tasks, a background task, a very simple task that waits for the exit, and some foreground tasks. A typical scenario here is, for instance, if you want to install or you want to configure that your virtual machine, so the web role, is using classic ISP, ESP. So then you do a start package manager slash UI IS minus ESP. This means this command is run every time that your virtual machine is booting. So also when you ask for another instance, and let's say that you're running with one instance and you have a kind of peak and you want to scale up to a second instance, well, that command file is also run for that second instance. So it is a way to have some hook, some extensibility before your application is active behind the load balancer to run some scripting, to do something with your registry, to install something, and so on. Next feature is the full IaaS, and we are now running since SDK 1.3. Your applications are running under a full IaaS version. Before that, it was a kind of trimmed down IaaS version. Now we have the full IaaS version, And you can configure, so from within your Azure configuration, you can define, like for instance, multiple sites. This is one of the scenarios of the full IIS configuration. So here you see in this example, I'm creating multiple sites which are coupled to a host header name. So www.fabricam.com will go to a physical directory sample web application. And maybe some other domain name, contoso.com, has another binding, goes to another virtual application, has other virtual directories. So you can create everything onto the level of virtual directories. And you will see this if you go to the IIS manager. If you define multiple sites in your configuration, you will also see that there are multiple sites and even also multiple application pools. So this means you have the full power, you have the full control of whatever you want to do in IIS through this service model. So then go on to the next one, the VM role. Important new feature, highly expected. The VM role is your ability to upload your own customized 2008 Windows Server R2 images. This means you have full control over the operating system image. You can install whatever you want on it. So you don't have to work with a startup task, or you don't have to change the config file to configure IIS. You just build your virtual machine on premises first, and whenever you're happy with it, when you think the virtual machine is ready, everything works, everything is installed, then you can deploy it to Azure, and Azure will run it behind the load balancer. You can also remote desktop into the operating system. It's like a normal RDP connection that you set up to some machine on premises. You can also set up this connection to your cloud virtual machine on Azure. So typical target scenarios are, well, if you need to install some applications or libraries that you cannot install unattended. If you have to click some buttons, if you have to type in some information during the install, this typically will not work with a web or worker role. It would be too complicated. So with the VM role, you do it yourself. You install everything before you upload. You can also run 32-bit applications, so whatever runs on your Hyper-V 2008 environment also run in the cloud. Maybe you want to change registry settings, and you want to add some license keys for some libraries. Well, you can also do this also in the VM role, of course. The basic principle of the VM role remains the same. It's a scale-out mechanism. You have the ability to have multiple instances which are running behind the load balancer. The load balancer has one public IP address for the service that knows how to distribute the load across your different instances of your VM role. Scale out means there is also no durability of the operating system image on hardware failure. So this remains that your applications, they still need to be stateless. It's not very useful to have for every instance memory occupied by state or writing state on the disk of the virtual machine role. Because if you reboot, or somebody reboots, or there is another reason to reboot the machine, that state is not there anymore. Okay, there are some technologies to work around this situation, like the App Fabric caching, or like the Azure Blob Storage, which you can mount as a drive letter to one of the machines. But basically, it is a stateless environment. Also, you have to know, of course, that with the VM role, you as a customer, as an end user, as an application developer, you create and you maintain the operating system. Compared to a web and work role, you will see that web and work role will be patched, will be maintained from within the data center, but the VM role you have to maintain yourself. But then again, the paying model is exactly the same. You pay also the same amount of money per CPU hour compared to VM role, compared to web role and worker role. So the price is exactly the same. You don't pay to Azure for the operating system license. You don't pay any client access license. You have to have a valid operating system license to start with, but you don't pay, you don't see this on your monthly bill coming from Azure. Because VMroll is based on working with Hyper-V, we can also support differencing disks. Differencing disk means, well, I have a base image and I can create a differencing disk out of that base, or I can create a differencing disk which has this other image as a parent, and it only contains the changes, the deltas that I perform on the operating system. So if I want to install something or change some configuration, it is very good idea to have a differencing disk. Start at the differencing disk based on your parent, and then apply the changes, do some configuration, add some applications, and then you can upload differencing disk. So the first time you upload your base disk to the Azure data center, for every delta, for every new version of your virtual machine, you work with a differencing disk and you can upload the differencing disk. So a differencing disk is typically very small compared to your main image. Let's discuss a little bit more the differences between web worker role on one side and VM role on the other side. All three of them are virtual images. They're running in the data center under the control of the Azure Fabric Controller, and the Azure Fabric Controller is actually a very smart version of Hyper-V running in the data center that controls all the instances, knows when an instance is in trouble or goes down, and is there to meet the service level agreement. If some hardware in the data center fails, it will start up your virtual machine on another piece of hardware to give you as a customer the service level agreement continuously. So the web and the work role, the basic idea there is you will start working with Visual Studio. You create an application like I've shown you before, and then you upload the application as a binary package to Azure. And within Azure, there is a virtual image already there, and the Azure Data Center will inject your application into that virtual machine and then run the virtual machine behind the load balancer. Compared to the VM role, we have another situation. VM role starts with working in Hyper-V, the virtualization technology. So you build a complete virtual machine yourself. You put on top of that, while you're still on premises, on your application. Okay, this can also be that Visual Studio is deploying it to your virtual image, but you can install ISO files, you can install MSI files, whatever you want. And after that, you just upload a complete virtual image containing an application to Azure, and then again it will be running behind the load balancer with multiple instances if you want. So how does the VM role lifecycle exactly looks like? You start with Hyper-V, you create a VHD file, and you install your operating system. The operating system, the only operating system that currently is supported is Windows 2008 R2. So don't try to install Windows 7 or another operating system. To be able to run in the Azure data center, it should be Windows 2008 R2 and only this version. You install whatever you want on that. Typically, you want to turn off the automatic updates, so you don't want that your virtual machine in the cloud is rebooting itself because the automatic updates were configured. So the best idea is to have all the updates applied to your image while you're still working on premises, and after that, do the upload. If your image is running in Hyper-V locally, you log into it, you have to install the VM role integration components. This is some kind of agent, some kind of little application that must be run on your image. And to install this application, there is an ISO file which is part of the Azure SDK. And from within Hyper-V, you mount that ISO file and you simply run that application. And the Windows Azure VMware integration components. That application will ask you for the credentials, for the username and password of the administrator of your virtual machine. Okay. After you have done that, there is one step you have to do. You have to run an application which is part of Windows Server, which is called Sysprep. Sysprep will make your virtual machine in a ready state that it can be used on Azure. Basically, what Sysprep does or can do for you is it will be decoupled from all your hardware that is running locally. So your virtual machine then doesn't know anymore what mouse driver or what graphical card you have. It is totally stripped down from all hardware-related configuration. And then you can bring it down the machine, and then you can upload the VHD to Windows Azure. So uploading that VHD, well, it can take a while because you're uploading maybe between 6 or 10 gigabytes of data. So there is some tool to do that. I will go back to my desktop for that. So if you open up the command prompt of the Windows Azure SDK environment, there is a tool called CS Upload. CS Upload has the ability to upload a very large set of data. And with the parameters you specify for CS Upload, you can specify that the data that you're uploading is actually a virtual machine. Or maybe it is a differencing disk. So you parameterize the CS Upload command to specify it is a differencing disk, it is a base disk, and so on. But the nice thing about CS Upload is if you abort it, or maybe it's aborted because your internet connection is down, and you start it up again, it will continue where it was stopped. So if you already uploaded, let's say, one quarter of the image, and you stop it, well, the next day you can continue, and it will just continue with the upload. Okay. Okay. Well, there are some slides, but I'm already full screen. So creating a VHD and Hyper-V, installing the operating system and so on. I show you some screenshots. This is the way that you have to do it, of course. So you see you can install whatever feature that you want, even desktop experience and so on. Next step is that you define the service model. I showed you already a little bit here from within Visual Studio. We'll go back to my desktop again to see some demo on that. So if I go to the configuration of my virtual machine role and I select the correct credentials, I can see all the VHD files that I have already uploaded. So in my Azure account, I already uploaded four different VHD files, one of them which is a differencing disk. I will show you them also in the management portal. If I open up the management portal, the Windows Azure management portal, you see this is the new interface, totally rewritten for Silverlight. And I go to VM images, so they are all here. So with under my account, I see the VHD drives. And then from within Visual Studio, I select, well, my topology of my service contains a VM role, and it must be running, like for instance, this virtual hard disk. And then I do some configuration, saying, well, I want that many instances. The VM size must be this size, and so on. I'm not going to deploy this now, I already deployed something. I will show you how to remote desktop into it. If you go to also services here, I've already deployed some services. This is my instance, so this is the virtual machine 2 service. It is running on one instance, and I can connect to it simply by clicking the connect button here. I am obtaining an RDP file, which I can open, and then I connect with RDP to the machine. So now I'm in the virtual machine, but I hope I can. How to get out of that? Okay, I'm inside the virtual machine. You see, I have installed Microsoft Expression Encoder here. I did this from within my Hyper-V environment, and then I uploaded the VHD drive, and I can run whatever application I want. Scenario that I'm doing here is I have this service host, which is a .NET application, which is calling the encoder SDK to encode videos. And this service is running on a URL. Here I'm also working with the client on the same virtual machine, but you can imagine that this client can run on another machine, while this service host here, which is a WCF service host, is running on my VM role in the cloud, going to check if the server is still alive, and then I do start encoding. So for within on-premises, I can say, well, there is some WMV file which is placed on Azure Storage. I already uploaded the WMV file to Azure Storage, and now this service is downloading it, and after a while, it will start encoding it. So you see here, he's bit by bit doing the encoding in the cloud, but I can trigger it from an on-premises client. So what also this service host is doing, it is storing some data on a local disk. So here I have the C drive of the virtual machine. I created some directory there and some work directory. So he has downloaded in the raw directory some media file. And he's working in another library where he is placing the temporary files that are used to do the encoding. So once the encoding is finished, I will not wait, it will take another few minutes here because this is a very high quality video. It will publish the data back to Azure Storage. So then you will see on the other side the encoded videos appearing also on Azure Storage. And maybe then there is some other work role, or maybe a web role, which is internet facing, that will publish the videos. So you see in my topology, I have a web role to publish the videos to the end users, and I have a virtual machine role that will encode the videos in the background. Okay. So hope I can go out of the virtual machine now. Don't know how to do it. All right, should be okay now. Yep. Okay, I'm out of it again. Going to already show you a little bit more content about the way to connect to it. From within my configuration here, I can say, well, I want to enable the RDP connection. So you as an administrator of the complete set of services, you can decide whether somebody can remote access into a virtual machine role or not. And the way that we're working here is you define a user and a password. So if you go to the configuration of the VM role, the configuration of the remote access, you can specify the username and set a password and a confirmation of that password. So this means that you are not working with the users that are configured into the virtual machine. You're not working with that same administrator account. But here I can define, well, the username, although the username demo is not existing on my virtual machine, I can specify, well, I can use the username demo to log in into the virtual machine. And that user has also the administrative credentials. He can do whatever he wants on the virtual machine. But you see here, well, we're not using the users inside the virtual machine. You can create one user to have remote access to it. Also understand that there is only one active connection possible at a given moment in time. If somebody logs in into your virtual machine on Azure, then the next one also tries to log in with the same user, because there is only one user and one password, he will kick out the first one. So only one user can have access at a given moment in time to your virtual machine. So there is no scenario that you can have multiple users RDPing into your machine. It is only there for administrative purposes, to log in, to change something, to start up a service, to clear the log files, pure IT pro administrative tasks, but not to be used for an end user. You cannot have a list of users going with RDP to your machine. This is not the scenario. So enough about the VM role. Going back to the slides now and show you more content on virtual network. Okay, we have seen the demo. Virtual network was previously known as Azure Connect. Secure network connectivity between on-premises and cloud, supporting IP protocols. A very easy way to set up IP level network connectivity between two machines. One machine can be in the cloud, which is your VM role or a web role, and another machine can be your backend SQL server running in a data center running on-premises, and you want to expose only the SQL server to your application. So this scenario would be that you have an application that has its business logic and UI in the cloud, but the data storage is still a SQL server on-premises. So it's the same way as working before. Your application will have some connection to a database. Maybe it uses Entity Framework as a data access layer, and it will connect to a database. And the name of the database, well, this could be a database which is not a SQL Azure database, but an on-premises SQL server running in your own data center, and it can access that from the cloud. So this is the scenario for virtual network. Another scenario is where you can have your Azure application or your instance or maybe your VM role have a domain joined into your corporate Active Directory. So you can have your machine in the cloud being part of your Active Directory on-premises. So then it is one logical network, and the code that is running on your VM role can then be running under the credentials which are defined in your Active Directory. Another scenario is simply to have a remote web administration, troubleshooting Azure roles. Maybe you have some PowerShell commands that are doing something with your current machines. Well, if you have an IP level network connectivity, those PowerShell commands can also access your roles in the cloud. The connectivity that is created by virtual network is enabled by installing also some agent, a little tool that you can download also from the Azure website, which is also part of the SDK and so on, needs to be installed. And that tool will also do some DNS name resolution for you. Going to the next slide, we'll show you more architecture overview of Azure Virtual Network. For every machine that I want to join together, I install that Azure Connect Gateway, that little tool that I've discussed about. I install it on that machine. For a VM role, I typically need to install it myself for an on-premises machine also. But for the web and the worker roles, it is simply a matter of changing the configuration of your web and worker role configuration. I will show you that in Visual Studio. And once the two are connected, if they find each other, they are really they're actually connected through some network policy. By default, they cannot have communication. So there is some policy which is defining which machine can access whatever other machine. That policy is managed also through the Azure portal. So by default, there is no connection, or there is connection, but they cannot communicate to each other. As an administrator from within the Azure portal, you can define what communication is allowed, from where to where, and so on. Going back to my desktop to show you a demo on that. Okay, what I want to do here is first show you that I've installed the Azure Connect gateway on my local machine here. And this is this little icon. Azure Connect. So then it knows, well, there is an IPv6 tunnel and it will do the communication. Okay. Then I can go to my Windows Azure portal. There is an option here, Virtual Network. And then I see my machine here, BE, Carclise, and so on, is now known by my Azure environment. That little tool has provisioned himself. And now I can add that machine to some roles. Here in this demo, I already connected my machine to the group Connect Group 1. But here you see another role, another machine, which is my machine at home. It's not running for the moment, but it is my machine at home that is using the same credentials for the Virtual Connect agent. It is not part of a group here. So this is the default situation. Well, to have connectivity also to that machine, I can say, well, this machine, Devitect, move it to a group, and then he asks me to which group, and I move it to some group successfully. And the screen will refresh, and then I will see here, well, there is one group which contains three machines. My machine here that I'm using currently now, some worker role, and some other machine somewhere, maybe behind a firewall, I don't know. So this is the way to administer which computers can connect to which other computer. I've deployed also a worker role here with the Azure Connect configuration on. I will also try to remote into that. So this is my machine here, worker role in the namespace virtual network. We'll also try to connect into that. Okay, you must have typed in the wrong password. So now I'm in another virtual machine. I'm going to have a look at ipconfig. So this machine is running in the data center, has also the Azure Connect gateway installed, the Azure Connect tool installed by default because I have configured it. And if I now look at ipconfig, I will see there is a PPP adapter for Windows Azure Connect Relay. And it has an IPv6 address. And also my machine on which I'm presenting right now also has this Connect Relay PPP adapter with also an IPv6 address. And I can ping to that IPv6 address. But even better, instead of pinging to that IPv6 address, I can just ping the name that is known as my machine name, BE-CarClise-Europe-Corporate-Microsoft.com, and it will do the resolution and it will send the ping command. So this is running in the cloud. My machine is here in the Microsoft offices in Zaventem, and if everything is all right, just by specifying that we have placed the two machines in the same Azure Connect group, they can communicate to each other. And so what I try to do is have an endless ping here. I have the wrong keyboard, so that's the problem. Okay, no matter. Oh, let's do the ping again. You see, well, I have all the replies. Going back to my administrative portal, if this is possible, yes, here. And then I will remove it. I go back to virtual network. So now I decide, well, those two cannot communicate to each other anymore. So by this situation, the worker all can communicate to this machine. I will remove it from the group. I will not remove my worker all, but I will remove my local machine from that group. So my machine is here at a level that it was by default. It's not connected to any group. Going back to the virtual machine, and I try to ping it again. And he says, well, he could not find that machine anymore. And so we were creating a kind of virtual network where two machines or maybe three machines were part of the network, my web role in the cloud and my local machine. But now I've changed that configuration, so they are not part of the same network anymore. I cannot ping them. Okay. I will close this and go back to the slides. So that was the demo on virtual network. I personally think this is a very cool technology. It can also be used in another scenario. You can also connect two on-premises machines to each other in different networks behind different firewalls, and they can connect to each other. So it doesn't need always to be connection from a cloud application to some on-premises application. I can have a machine at home and maybe some machine in another company. Well, they can also have some IPv6 level connectivity through Azure Connect. Okay. So we have about, I think, 10 minutes left. I'm running a little bit out of time because I want to spare some time for questions and answers. I'm looking to Anthony. Are there some questions that are?
No, at the moment, no questions.
Okay, so feel free to ask questions. Okay, we cannot answer them live here, but use the Q&A button at the top of your live meeting application. Feel free to ask some questions. So I can continue with about 10 minutes more about AppFabric caching, a very useful technology, distributed in-memory cache, which is implemented as a cloud service. It is actually also running on Azure. There are Azure instances for that caching technology. And basically, it has the same capabilities that are currently available in Windows Server App Fabric caching. Eh? So you know the name App Fabric is used for as well Azure in the cloud, or also Windows Server App Fabric. Eh? We use the same words, the same brands on both levels. And the idea is that eventually those two environments are exactly the same. And you already see this with caching technology. In the cloud, we will offer the same caching technologies as on-premises. So how can you call, how can you use the cache? You can programmatically interact with the cache. So there is an API to add some things into the cache. Another scenario or another way of working is it has some out-of-the-box ASP.NET providers to support session state and page output caching. So without any change in your code, you can use AppFabric caching to store the session variables maybe of a stateful application running on Azure. So if you combine this with also the programmatically way to interact with the cache, you can also kind of pre-populate some information into the cache. So you can use it as a stateful environment to store session, but you can also use it to speed up data retrievals, access to static data. You can already programmatically insert some data into that caching system, a kind of pre-populated cache. So this is the basic idea here about App Fabric caching. Multiple role instances can read and write data from this caching service. The caching service will contain name value pairs, and you can add some data, you can read some data from it. Okay, because we are almost running out of time, I will show you the code for the demo. I will not actually run it because it needs some deployment and will take me too long. Going back to my desktop again. Okay, we are here. Open up Visual Studio. I'm going to quickly open some other project here. Let's say I have this piece of code here. In one click event here, I'm storing something into a session variable. And maybe in some other event, I'm reading something from a session variable. Very typical pattern in many applications. Well, by default, this will not scale. If I don't do anything, I have a problem because if I'm running behind a load balancer, within one session, it could be possible that the first button is run in the server behind the load balancer, the first instance. And maybe the second click will run its code on another machine, and because it's simply behind the load balancer, behind the same URL. So this means sessions are by default only defined in memory. They don't have access to each other memory. Well, with Azure and the Azure App Fabric caching service, it allows me to have the code exactly like this. I don't have to change anything. But what I need to do is within my web config, I need to create some configuration, which is called data cache client, and maybe the page client, here this data cache client part of it. It has some credentials. It has a host name, this cache test.cache.affibreclabs.com, and some username and password. This is something you also define at the level of the administrative portal. So from within the portal, you can configure your caching. Nothing more than that. It's an endpoint. It's a service. It has a host name and it has some credentials. Nothing more than that. And then you have the session state provider. So instead of having no session state provider or maybe the SQL Server session state provider, you would define here that it is using the App Fabric cache session store provider. So now from within the application, it is exactly the same. Every session variable is stored into that caching service. Every time I do retrieval of the session variable, it is read back from the caching service again. Like I said, there are also some libraries to have access to it. So there is the Microsoft Application Server caching.client, caching.core, and some Windows Fabric libraries. And this allows you to have complete control of all the caching in the cloud. There is an API to store variables, to change the caching, to change also the time to live of a certain value. So it will disappear from memory after a while if you specify the time to live, and so on. Okay, back to the slides for the last few minutes. So, at the end of the presentation, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you learned a lot of new things.